Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Strangely enough, I need to release the stress, and it's when I start to go clubbing and I discover techno music. It's probably when I had the most crazy time. I mean, I will go to bed at midnight, wake up at 6 a.m. because the DJ was really good at 6 a.m. And I go from 6 to 1, I dance. I meet friends from Jean-Georges, cooks from Jean-Georges, cooks from Daniel, cooks from other places. And then at 1 o'clock, I leave the club and I go have lunch with my wife to restaurants and I have my afternoons.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org presents Evolutionaries. Eric Repair. Eric Repair is a French chef, author, and television personality specializing in the modern French cuisine and renowned for his work with seafood. He's the co-owner of the New York restaurant Le Bernardin, which ranks 18 on the S. Pellegrino World's 50 Best Restaurants list. The celebrated restaurant holds 3 stars from the Michelin Guide, a 29 food rating from the 2011 Zagat Guide, and has upheld a 4-star review from the New York Times for over 2 decades. Eric was born in 1965 in France, and then moved to Andorra, a small country just over the Spanish border, where he was raised. He learned to cook at a young age from his grandmother and always had a passion for eating. When he was 15, he left home to attend culinary school in France.
So I graduated from culinary school, 1982, and I don't want to work in a small restaurant, or I want to work in a 3-star restaurant, which is the reference at that time in France. 3-star is 18 restaurants. I write a letter to them, and nobody responds except Maxim's, which is a 2-star at the time, and they say thank you very much, but no. So I'm a little bit disappointed, but you know, I enjoy my vacation. And then in September, by surprise, on Friday, we receive a letter from La Tour d'Argent in Paris. They're celebrating their 400 years anniversary at that time. They have 3-star. They're very popular and respected. I called the restaurant, and on Monday, 3 days later, I am in Paris with my suitcase. and I start in La Tour d'Argent. La Tour d'Argent was specialized in ducks. However, they put me on a fish station with someone who became a dear friend of mine. He was the chef poissonnier. And at that time, it was a new chef, Dominique Boucher, who was trying to bring a lot of the influence of Nouvelle Cuisine in La Tour d'Argent and so on. So the fish station was exciting and interesting, less traditional than the meat, which was mainly duck. So I am his commis, which means I am his help. And it's when I realized from the first minute I am working with him that I know nothing. Basically, I cut myself, so I ask for a band-aid after 30 seconds, so I don't have good knife skills. I can't whisk 32 egg yolks on the stove. I don't know what chervil is. I'm like, wow, I'm graduated from culinary school. I am in that restaurant, and I know nothing at all. And that is a big wake-up call, because I have the passion and the fire, but I'm tremendously challenged, and I don't know if they're going to keep me. I made it because I was, I think, highly motivated. And on the afternoon, I would go home with some vegetables. I was living 15 minutes from La Tour d'Argent. And I would train how to cut and get some knife skills and so on. So I made it. I did almost all the stations of the restaurant, including the ducks, cooking ducks and so on. Went to pastry. Lasted a few hours. I think I ate 25 strawberries tartelettes or something like that as petit four, and they say, okay, you go back to the kitchen. It's a lot of rigor, discipline. They scream at you. Sometimes it's physical, in a sense that they punch you in the shoulders. You are treated with not too much respect. And the idea, it sounds to me crazy today when I think of it, but it's to basically teach people by humiliation. The ultimate goal is to break you. And then when you psychologically completely broken, to rebuild you and to make someone who potentially will be a great chef. I didn't really like that, to tell you the truth. I like better the positive reinforcement that I have seen in America compared to that. But the kitchen was a tough environment. You had to impose yourself, and the only way to impose yourself was by being good at what you were doing. And the problem was, each time you will become good at what you do, they will change you to another station, so you learn, obviously, something else. So it was a constant struggle. And it, I have to say, I was stressed and I was scared. And I don't think it's a good environment to bloom. But ultimately, it wasn't so bad since I did pretty well after. So I don't know who's right or not. So after La Tour d'Argent, I go to Joël Robuchon, Jamin, and suddenly I have to do my military duties because in France, school is free, but you have to give back 1 year of your life at that time. Today, it's not mandatory any longer. And I see that as a liberation. I'm like, whoa, I'm going to have a break. And so I go in the military. I'm specialized in explosives, mining and demining. I'm supposed to cook for the officers in the kitchen. The food is so bad. What they are doing is so bad. They managed one day, on my second day in that kitchen, to burn spaghettis in the kettle with water. I had never seen that. So I went to see the colonel and told him that, and he said, what do you mean to do? I mean, I can send you in a commandos. I said, no, I can't. I'm built like that, like a string bean. So I became his waiter. I spent 1 year in the military, but I didn't understand the logic of the discipline in the militaries as much as in the kitchen. In the kitchen, it was very rigid and dogmatic and very tough, but everything had a logic. You don't run because if you fall, you're going to hurt yourself. You don't run because you could bump into someone and he could burn himself or he could cut himself. In the militaries, it was like, okay, you're going to clean one side of the courtyard with the broom, and then when we were done, they were like, well, now you're going to put it on the other side again. And I was like, well, just for what? For what? I didn't get it. And at the end of my military duties, I went actually back to Joël Robuchon at Jamin to become a chef poissonnier. After 2 years in Robuchon, I want to get out of France. I mean, obviously, it's a lot of opportunities in France, and French chefs are very popular worldwide, and you can learn everywhere and so on. But basically, suffocating in France for some reason. I don't know why, but I feel boxed in. And I don't like also the way that they manage kitchens at that time. I don't like the atmosphere. It's a lot of solidarity in between the cooks and so on, but it's not for me. And I can't wait to get out. So I talked to actually Joël Robuchon, and I tell him that I want to leave and I want to travel and I want to go somewhere else. I want to go to Brazil. And for the wrong reasons, I think. So he says to me, no way, I'm not going to help you to go to Brazil. So I said, well, I would like to go to Spain. And he said, well, you come from Andorra, which is in between France and Spain. He said, why would you go back there? No. So I said, well, in that case, what do I do? And he said, go on vacation, and when you come back, I will have something for you. So when I came back from my vacation, he said, it's a position in Washington, D.C. with Jean-Louis Paladin in the U.S. Would you like to go there? I had been in New York once because I was friends with David Boulay, who was in training at Robuchon for a few weeks, and we became friends, and he invited me to New York, and I was fascinated. So I thought, wow, yeah, I mean, Washington must be the same. I'm going to America. I'm going in a new adventure. And it's how I left France and went to Washington.
In 1989, Eric Rupert made the trip to the United States and got a job as sous chef at the Watergate Hotel's Jean-Louis restaurant in Washington, D.C. He then moved to New York 2 years later, where he worked briefly as sous chef under David Boulay until he was offered the job at Le Bernardin. He's lived in New York ever since.
I am at Boulay in the kitchen, and then one day Jean-Louis Paladin called me and he says, I have the job of the century for you. It's Le Bernardin, they look for a chef, and Gilbert Lecoz is a great chef, and you have to go there, you have to do it. So I don't understand what he's talking about. I'm like, well, I'm sous chef at Boulet. I gave 1 year commitment. I can't just live like that. Jean-Louis says, no, Gilbert Lecoz is going to call you and you talk to him and go there. So Gilbert Lecoz called me and I find him a little bit abrupt in a discussion. And he said, I need a chef right now. And so on. I said, well, I can't. Okay. And he said, well, come in 2 days. We have breakfast together and we talk and I'll show you the restaurant. And I said, well, I'm not available in 2 days. And he basically almost hung up on me. I'm like, who's this guy? I'm not going there. So I never go to the appointment that I have with him. And Jean-Louis Paladin called me a week later, scream at me like I'm crazy and so on. Anyway, 2 months later, Gilbert Lecoz called me again and says, well, look, maybe I was a bit abrupt and so on. I would love to show you my restaurant. I understand you have a commitment, but why don't you come and check it out? And I like the tone of the voice. I meet with Gilbert and we get along immediately. I mean, suddenly we are like, wow. I don't know. It's a strange connection, strong connection. He showed me his kitchen. I love the kitchen. I love Le Bernardin. I love the organization. And he invited me for dinner. I eat there with a friend of mine. And I really like the food. And I decide to give David 6 months notice to go to Le Bernardin. David doesn't like that much. And then 3 months later, I will have a fight and leave David and call Gilbert and start at Le Bernardin. When I arrived at Le Bernardin, I see this restaurant very well run, with a good ambience. Nobody's screaming in that place and so on. It's a good organization, but very, very, very rigid. Gilbert is very demanding, but it's a very civilized place. Myself, I'm the youngest in the kitchen and I'm the chef, so I right away want to impose myself to the staff. And I also have a vision. Gilbert was an autodidact. I come from a very, I think, good education from my previous mentors. And I actually will change the dynamic of the restaurant in a bad way because I'm abusive to the waiters, I'm abusive to the cooks, and I'm changing completely the ambience of the restaurant. At that time, I believe I improved the quality of the food, although the food was very good, but in my head, I think so. And I made a mistake. So suddenly the ambience change and people start to leave, the talented people start to leave. And it's when I realize that I have made a mistake. However, Gilbert was very smart. He saw me making the mistake and he backed me up. He let me do my mistakes and learn from my mistakes. And when employees will go to him and complain about me, he will say, hey, he's the chef, you have to deal with him. So that restaurant that was a mix of American culture in terms of management and French culture in terms of influence lost the positive from the American culture of managing people for a while. And then, of course, I embraced the idea of having a peaceful environment to work in. But it took me years to reverse what I had destroyed.
In 1994, Eric Repair became Le Bernardin's executive chef after Gilbert died unexpectedly of a heart attack. The following year, Eric Repair earned a 4-star rating.
So Gilbert passed away 1 day before he goes in vacation. He's at the health club and doesn't feel good, go lay down and will never come back. That day I was at the James Beard Foundation cooking. For the first time at the James Beard Foundation, Le Bernardin was cooking a dinner. And I learned the news before the dinner. And I'm conflicted. Well, first of all, I'm devastated because I was a very close friend. It was even more than a friend. It was in between the father that I had never had and a very close friend and a mentor. And so I'm extremely affected emotionally. But when I receive the news, I am at the Beard and I'm thinking, do I cancel the dinner? Do we close the restaurant? What do we do? I'm thinking about Maggie Lecoz, who was very close to him. She's in Atlanta. Ultimately saying, you know what? We're going to pay homage to Gilbert tonight at the beer. And obviously, I'm not going to go after the dinner to get the applause from the crowd there and the clients and so on. But I'm cooking and then I go back to Le Bernardin. And I'm thinking all that night during the dinner about what we're going to do, what we say to the staff. Are we going to close the restaurant? Are we going to pay homage to him in some ways and so on? And I will have the answers very quickly because his sister is back. She's extremely affected as well. But she says, you know, my brother was, we say in French, a battant, someone who's a fighter in a sense. And she said, and he always wanted to move forward and he never wanted to stop and so on. So I think what we should do is to, personally pay homage to him. And obviously she went back in France with his body and so on and spent time there. But she said, I want the restaurant to still active and that will be, I believe, the way Gilbert would like things to be done. So we keep the restaurant open and no break. Then I need a vacation. So I take a vacation. She asked me to, when I come back, take everything from the menu that is from her brother and to do my cooking. And I didn't really, I was reluctant. I wanted to keep, to pay homage to him and have respect to him. And she said, that's not the way to do it. You're not respecting my brother by keeping his dishes. We are not going to create a museum of memories of when my brother was here. He will hate that. He will not like that. So when you come back from your vacation, you change completely the menu. And I did it. I came back. I kept maybe one or two very strong dishes that the clientele really wanted to see and changed the menu because she was pushing me to do so much. That's the way we reacted to his loss. The response to the menu was, I believe, positive. I mean, it's hard to know. I know that later on, I will find out that it was a rumor in New York that I would not keep the stars and the food was going down and the service was going down and so on. And I had absolutely no idea that it was a rumor like that because I basically was so focused in my craft and in my leadership that I was really, really not seeing the outside world, not hearing anything, which was good because it made me being not distracted and I had to be really focused at that time. Ruth Rachel came from September to April when we got a review. She came supposedly 12 times. So she really, really wanted to make sure that I will get 4-star or not. And when we got the 4-star, suddenly the rumor stopped and Le Bernardin was back in track and we were busy more than ever and so on. But for me, the pre-review and the after-review didn't change anything in my vision, in my lifestyle, in the way I was functioning. I was focused on making the boat float and move forward.
Eric earned his 4-star rating from the New York Times at a mere 29 years of age. In 1997, GQ named Le Bernardin the best restaurant in America. All of this success prompted Eric to look deeper and rediscover his roots. And in 2002, he published the cookbook A Return to Cooking, which would change his style in the kitchen forever.
Return to Cooking became a cookbook, but was an idea to go back to my roots. At one point, I'm burned. I'm burned with the leadership, the stress of the kitchen, with the volume that we're doing. I need to find myself again as a cook and disconnect from the reality of that very demanding kitchen and restaurant to manage. So I decide to take a writer, which is Michael Ruhlmann, go with a friend of mine, a painter, and a couple of photographers, and to explore the seasons, like the 4 seasons. And we go to 4 different locations. So we rent a house, and it's based on improvisation. The painters start every day with a white canvas. The photographers have the freedom to shoot whatever they want, obviously related to the project. Even the writer has the freedom to do whatever he wants as well, but it has to be related to the project. And my challenge is to find the ingredients and to cook a meal And when I'm cooking, it's lunch and dinner. So we sit down and we all eat together what I'm cooking. It's not like I'm cooking, we take a picture with a little brush, we brush here and we make with a different light, we make the dish looking good and so on. It's an experiment for everyone. So the photographers shoot the last plate that I'm plating very quickly. They have 30 seconds and then we eat the food. And return to cooking is essential for me because what I will realize later on is that, wow, my food is good. Until that day, I never believed I was a good cook. Because when I was in Robuchon, we were trained to be humble. And it was this kind of oppression. So everybody was cooking and it was never good enough. Never good enough. So I truly, truly believed, even after the 4-star in Le Bernardin and after being the leader of the kitchen, and I believe I'm not really a good cook. Return to cooking will change that. And suddenly I'm like, oh my God, I'm insulting my luck. I mean, I have a gift. I'm a good cook. And I have been like suppressing that gift. And I can't insult my luck like that. I have to really admit it to myself and move forward. So Return to Cooking in 2002 is a turning point in my life as a cook and as a chef, because suddenly I gain confidence. After Return to Cooking, I'm like, we have to have a strong philosophy written somewhere in our head. And I'm like, okay, the mantra will be the fish is the star of the plate, and that will dictate our style now forever. From that day until today, we apply the mantra on everything we do with the fish at Le Bernardin. So when you think like that, it's very powerful, because you're like, wow, what can I do to make the cod the best cod possible? And I know very well that cod is not like halibut or salmon. It's a different fish and it lacks different techniques and different flavors and so on. So I don't take anything for granted. And when we get something to celebrate, we celebrate. But it doesn't really affect me internally. I mean, when we get the 4-star review, we drink champagne and we celebrate. The morning after, I don't think about it at all. When I look at my resume, sometimes I'm surprised that we got so many good things because I don't live by that, by them. It doesn't influence anything except the fact that we obviously it motivates the team to excel more. But it's about it. In my house, I still don't bring back magazines and newspapers, although now it's on the internet. So at home, they can, you know, by Googling, they can find what's going on. But I never, ever, ever bring back anything home. And I always remember what Gilbert said to me one night. We were partying, actually. He looked at me and he said, you know, I believe you're going to be successful in this industry. I mean, as a chef, I think you're going to be... you're going to become potentially famous or something. He said, but if it happens, remember one thing. When you see the article or when you see your picture, look at it once. If it's good, never look at it again. And if it's bad, learn the lessons. And it stayed in my mind. And until this day, I look at the articles or read the articles only once, because I think it's very healthy to do that.
Eric Repair is a practicing Buddhist and has often talked about the impact that has on his relationship to food, especially the respect for ingredients, sustainability, joy, the way he manages his team, and the relationships he keeps with the people in his life.
It started when I left France. I was about to enter the plane and I find a book about Tibet and Buddhism, and I had some interest. And then I read the speech of acceptance for the Nobel Prize of Peace from the Dalai Lama. And that was a tremendous inspiration. And then I kind of procrastinate a little bit. But then I started to go to the teaching of His Holiness, and I started to read some books from His Holiness and so on. It grew in me. And today I'm a true Buddhist practitioner. So Gilbert Lecoz, when he passed away, was 48. Next week, I'm 48. My father left this world when he was 42. He was very young. I mean, obviously, we never think we're going to potentially die in 10 minutes. It takes us by surprise. But I'm not anxious about leaving this world. I'm actually preparing myself every day to that departure and the idea is to live in peace. And because I believe in reincarnation, is to prepare myself for my next reincarnation. But I'm very peaceful about the idea of leaving everything here, including my body. I'm okay with that because I try to do the right thing in life. I try to be a better man every day. I try to do better than yesterday in every aspect of my life. Now, if people like it or don't like it or criticize, or that I have a thick skin. I mean, you know, I went through those kitchens. I went through the military. What is important to me is to be happy with myself, because then when you like or love yourself, you can apply that to other people. If you don't know how to do it with yourself, you cannot do it with others.
Eric Repair currently serves as the chair of City Harvest's Food Council, which works to bring together New York's top chefs and restaurateurs to raise funds and increase the quality and quantity of food donations to New York's neediest. When he's not at Le Bernardin, he can be found hanging out with friend Anthony Bourdain and shooting the show No Reservations, judging on Bravo's Top Chef, or filming his own cooking show on PBS, Avec Eric. The world eagerly awaits his next step. This program was produced by Aaron Fairbanks and Jack Inslee, with additional research by Eric Himmelfarb and Leah Eden. In order of appearance, the songs used in this piece are Born Slippyton by Boyfriend and Chrono, Lung by Iggy Dean, Kill Me in the Summertime by The Dead Stars, Big Pants by Rectech, Hologram by Snowmine, Sad by Jerome LOL, The Old Photographer by Ball of Flame Shoot Fire, Tulum by Space Disease, and once again Born Slippyton by Boyfriend and Chrono. Thanks for listening, and visit heritageradionetwork.org for all of our programming and more information.